want to remind you what I did last time. So I told you why this is all exciting. So an extra dimension to the well-known, the well-understood game board. I also told you that I've quit. I'm a retired. I'm a emeritus person because I went back to the original board because I realized that I don't understand it well enough. I told you a bit about philosophy, so basically categorification is replacing numbers with sets, but more precisely with sort of exact sequence of sets, and even more precisely, not exact sequence, complexes of sets, and more precisely complexes of vector spaces. And then I reminded you of the Jones polynomial defined by, well, a crossing goes to a smoothing class with coefficients, the other type of smoothing, and the unknown goes to Q plus Q inverse. And then I explain how to compute it for a general knot. So if you have an n crossing knot, you form the n-dimensional cube of smoothings. And then for each smoothing, you get a monomial by counting how many a polynomial by counting how many components are there, taking q plus q inverse to that power, to the number of components, and q shifting by a degree shifting by some power of q. And then I said, okay, if I want to categorify, the first thing to do is to replace q plus q inverse by a vector space. So I introduced the vector space V, which is a two-dimensional vector space, but with two generators of degree plus minus one, so the q dimension of V is q plus q inverse. And then when you take one of the nodes of the graph before, one of the vertices, you get a smoothing. Previously, it had a polynomial in it. Now I have a vector space, so the vector space corresponding to q plus q inverse, meaning v, tensor squared to square the dimension, and shift degree shifted by 5. When I do it to all boxes, I get the chain spaces of a complex. So this is the chain 0, these are the 1 chains, the direct sum of all the things on the column 1. This is the 2 chains, these are the 3 chains, but I still need to tell you what the differentials are. After messing up with signs a little bit, all I have to do is to tell you what maps to put on the edges. And there are only 2 types of edges, meaning the edges in which you merge 2 components into 1, and the edges in which you split 1 component into 2. And correspondingly, I need maps from V tensor V into V and from V into V tensor V. These maps are essentially forced on you, and they are given by these formulas. And with all of this given, with all of this given, I'm done with the definition of Hovanov homology, but I still have to prove to you that it is invariant. And that's where I stopped last time. Questions, comments? That was just a review. Okay. Now, as I mentioned last time, the difficulty in proving invariance is that I need to talk about tangles, about pieces of knots. And pieces of knots have sort of incompletely specified vector spaces in them, because you only know which vector space corresponds to this smoothing after you complete it on the outside. So it has incompletely specified vector spaces, and in between them, incompletely specified or not yet specified maps. So I need a tool to handle that. And the tool is clearly category theory, because I somehow need to talk about incomplete vector spaces, that would be a category, and incompletely specified maps between them, these would be the morphisms of that category. Okay? So the tool will be some tool from category theory, but rather than constructing it in a completely sort of logical way, let me present the result and then go back and define it sort of systematically. Okay? So here's the result, and let me describe to you as a picture, okay, as a word of art, as a work of art. Let me just describe it as a picture, and only later I will reinterpret every piece of it as a piece of mathematics. Okay? Now, I'm doing still the case of a closed knot, okay, of the trefoil, in fact. But the way I will present it now, it will be equally well working for a tangle. Okay? So, here's the picture. The picture, like before, is a three-dimensional cube, okay, with vertices going from 0, 0, 0 to 1, 1, 1, and it is skewered along its main diagonal, so if I project it down, I'll get the first column is the column where the sum of coordinates is 0, the zeroth column is where the sum of coordinates is 0, the second column is where the sum of coordinates is 2, and so on. Clearly, I could have done such a cube for any knot. The signs, well, they are here in blue, 1, 2, 3, and there is a fourth one somewhere, I think, here, are exactly the same as before, no comments about them. Okay. The edges, so here's the new stuff. The vertices contain smoothings. Look only at the stuff in black. The black is the smoothings, and it's the same smoothings as before. The edges contain cobordisms between these smoothings. So what's a cobordism? Well, a cobordism is a pair of planes. One and two, with a smoothing drawn on the top plane and another one drawn in on the bottom plane, and a two-dimensional surface in between whose bottom boundary is the bottom smoothing and whose top boundary is the top smoothing. Now, such smoothings form a category because, or such cobordisms form a category, right? Because if you have a pair of two such smoothings, and
sorry, I was supposed to tell you about the picture, not start to interpret it.
So forget it, it's a little bit of fun.
Anyway, so I put a cobordism on every edge, but notice that every edge has a bottom, which is one smoothing, and a top, well, a bottom, which is one smoothing. Well, how did I go? Here I guess I went from top to bottom. So a top, which is a certain smoothing, a bottom, which is another one. If you look at the smoothing that appears here in the bottom, look only at the black, ignore the other colors, then it's a second smoothing at the bottom. And how is this cobordism constructed? Well, I just take the smoothing written at the top, and sort of leave gaps around each crossing. So leave gaps around these yellow circles. Multiply the rest by an interval. So basically, all the rest becomes curtains that are drawn from the top down to the bottom, and then I fill in the circles again. Now, of the circles on any specific edge, n minus 1 of the crossings do not change from a 0 smoothing to a 1 smoothing. They just change, stay the same. So for n minus 1 of the cylinders that I left out, I just put in vertical curtains just as on the outside. But one exceptional cylinder is switching from a 0 smoothing to a 1 smoothing, and in that one exceptional cylinder,
cylinder, I put a standard solid that connects, well, the zeros pointing to the ones pointing. Okay? And this completely specifies what you do at the crossing. Now, to be more precise, if you have an overcrossing, you go from a zero smoothing to a one smoothing, and the cobordism is, well, again, since I don't want to draw cobordisms each time, I've invented a planar notation for cobordisms. So the planar notation is, well, this is really a cobordism going from the smoothing that you get by deleting this little edge in the middle to the smoothing that you get by unzipping this middle edge in the middle. Okay? Likewise, there is a convention for the negative crossings. And with this done, all the all the cobordisms on the edges in that picture are fully specified. Okay? There is only one tiny remaining ingredient in this picture, and this ingredient is done in very light colors so that you will not be able to see it. Okay? So in orange, which you cannot see, there are degree shifts, and in light blue, so that you cannot see it either, there is a homological degree shift or homological height shift, so shifting the entire complex left to right. Now, each one of these crossings came with notations for those two degree shifts, and when you look at the picture back again, you'll see that in a very, very faint color, those degree and height shifts are marked. If you can't see that, it's because I don't want you to see that on first pass. Okay? Is this fine? Good. So now I have the picture, and I hope you appreciate it as a work of art. And let's try to understand it as mathematics. So this picture lives in the space of complexes. So complexes is spelled with K, because otherwise it conflicts with the complex numbers. Okay, so these are complexes of well, not by vector set bases, but some sort of homological notion of complexes. So these are complexes of matrices over cobordisms, modulus certain local relations, and all of it is divided by homotopy, and I have to explain all of that. So first of all, cobordisms. Well, I unfortunately already explained cobordisms. Cobordisms have a smoothing at the top, so a one-dimensional manifold embedded in a disk at the top, a one-dimensional manifold embedded at the disk at the bottom. You compose them by stacking one on top of each other, and I regard everything, well, sorry, I regard the content of the box. So I regard the cobordism up to isotopies, or up to topological equivalences. So in other words, if within a topology, for example, within a cobordism, you have two saddles, well, I can pull down this saddle and push up this saddle. So this little picture is in fact equal to that little picture in my as two morphisms in my category. Okay, good. I've explained cobordisms. Now I need to explain matrices over cobordisms. So you see, whenever you have a category, you can extend it to the category of matrices over that category, of the old category. The way you do it is, first of all, you allow formal linear combinations of morphisms. So first of all, instead of having the morphism, instead of just allowing cobordisms as morphisms, I will allow formal linear combinations. So 7 times one cobordism plus pi times another cobordism, provided these two cobordisms have the same bottom and the same top.
Okay, so provided they go from the same object to the same other object. Okay?
Then I will allow vectors of cobordisms or vectors of objects. So the objects in the category of matrices will be vectors of objects in the original category. Meaning they will be just lists of vectors of a list of smoothings, and then another list of smoothings, and then another list of smoothings. And then a morphism in the category of matrices between one column vector and another column vector will be a matrix whose entries are morphisms in the original category between the correct objects. It's easier to visualize it as follows. So a morphism from O1 double prime, O2 double prime, to O1 prime, O2 prime, O3 prime, sorry, this is a 3. So a morphism from here to here will be either a 3 by 2 matrix, or alternatively, you can think of it as a bundle in the kind of English sense of the word bundle, meaning you take some things and bundle them together. So a bundle of arrows where you have one arrow going from each of these to each of those. So altogether 6 arrows to go from here to here. And then the composition law. So if you have two such bundles, the composition law is either matrix multiplication, if you think of it as matrices, or the alternatively, if I need to, in the composition, if I need to specify the morphism going from here to here, the answer will be, it will be the sum of all ways going from here to here via the intermediate objects in the intermediate column vector. So it will be the sum of G11 composed with F21, G21 composed with F22, G31 composed with F23, and that's the same as matrix multiplication. Okay? With all this in place, each column of my picture becomes an object in the category of matrices, and in fact each, well, intermediate space between the columns becomes a morphism. So I get a morphism from here to here by considering these 3 arrows, and I get a morphism from here to here by considering these, however many it is, 6 arrows, okay, and so on. And notice 2 things. First of all, some arrows are missing. So in the cube, there is no edge from here to here. So what I mean by that is that the corresponding matrix entry in the matrix representing the morphism from here to here is 0. Okay, so just in the bundle picture that was shown here, some of the arrows are missing, regards them as 0. Okay? And the second comment is that this is a commutative diagram. If you ignore the ones that I told you how to place yesterday, this is a commutative diagram. Indeed, the only difference, so let's pick one of the squares. If I go from here to here, either on the top, I wanted to say something else. Basically, if I just consider it as a diagram in code, before studying everything as matrices, before interpreting the columns as vectors, if I just look at everything in the original category COB, this is a commutative diagram. Indeed, going from here to here, there are 2 ways to go, either by first smoothing the middle crossing, and then the first crossing, or by first moving the first crossing and then the middle crossing. Okay? And the two ways of going from here to here differ by, differ by precisely vertically sliding two saddles against each other. But since these two morphisms are the same, it follows that going this way or going that way is the same. Okay? But now, again, look at it as matrices and insert the signs that I mentioned last time. And what I've just told you proves that the differential squared, that the map from here to here followed by the map from here to here, from this point on, the differential squared, is equal to zero. Okay? I suppose I failed to tell you what the local relations are. When I talk about cobordisms, I actually need something a bit weaker. So take cobordisms and mold them out by the following relations. First of all, if you ever see a sphere, what you see, when I define a cobordism, I said the top boundary should be a one-dimensional thing, the bottom boundary should be a one-dimensional thing, in between there should be a two-dimensional surfaces. I never said the word connected. So there could be a sphere floating inside somewhere. Okay? Let me just declare that whenever you see a sphere, it's equal to zero. Okay? Whenever you see a torus, it's equal to two. So if you see a torus floating in the air within a cobordism, you can remove it and replace it by a factor of two. If you see a higher genus surface, possibly even with boundary, it's equal to zero. So you see, really, it's a lot less than cobordisms. I mean, basically, you're only left with sort of very low genus things. So disks and disks with a handle. Okay? And finally, there is the neck cutting relation, which says that if you have a tube between two boundaries, anywhere within a cobordism, so between two circles you have a tube, then when you think of it as a neck, then you can sort of cut the neck and you get a little bit of dotted reds. And the relation says that twice the neck is equal to, well, you either cap the left stump, is this what it's called? The left sort of remaining thing with a disc with a handle and the right with just a disc, or the left with a disc and the right with a disc with a handle. Okay? Now, all of these relations are local. So I can divide by them, and I still have a well-defined composition of morphisms, so I still have a well-defined category. Okay. Good. Let's continue thinking about it. So, you see, I called it a complex, but it wasn't a complex of vector spaces. It was a complex in some abstract category. So let me tell you that complexes make sense in an arbitrary category. Namely, so suppose you have a category, maybe the category of matrices over cobordisms, but maybe any other category. So long as I can add morphisms, complexes make sense. So a complex will be a sequence of objects with a sequence of morphisms between them, so that when you go two steps, you get zero. Okay, remember that I insisted that the set of morphisms will be, well, you will have additions, and in particular, you have zero. So I want going twice along such a sequence to be zero. Now, you cannot talk about the homology of such a complex, because it makes no sense to take the kernel of a morphism in an arbitrary category. It makes no sense to talk about the kernel of a cobordism. But other notions from basic homology theory do make sense. So for example, if you have two morphisms, the omega zero morphism and the omega one morphism, two complexes, the omega zero complex and the omega one complex, a morphism between these two complexes will be a sequence of morphisms between omega 0 and omega 1, another one from omega 0 r to omega 1 r, another one from omega 1 0 r plus 1 to omega 1 r plus 1, and so on, so that these squares are commutative. Okay? And you can check that with that, the set of morphisms, the set of complexes over an arbitrary category in themselves become a category. So such diagrams will be the morphisms in the category of complexes, and you can check that the composition of two such morphisms is again a morphism. Yeah? A category in which you can add morphisms, in which the set of morphisms between any two objects is an abelian group or a vector space.
And what does it mean in terms of the
morphism between cobordisms? So I made these cobordisms into an additive category artificially. I just artificially allow formal linear combinations.
But
the cobordisms themselves are sort of not an additive group, but I can make them an additive group by allowing formal linear combinations. Okay? And finally, homotopies make sense. So if you have two complexes, the omega zero complex and the omega one complex, and two morphisms between them, the F morphism and the G morphism, then in ordinary first year algebraic topology, you would say that two such morphisms are homotopic if you can find morphisms going diagonally backwards so that F minus G is the homotopy times the differential plus the differential times the homotopy. So this definition makes sense in an arbitrary category. Okay? So I can define, in an arbitrary category, I can declare that two morphisms are homotopic if I can find such H's, so that this equation still holds. And that's another place where I need where I need to be able to add. Okay? And again, this has the same properties, or the same formal properties, that homotopies have in basic homological algebra. Namely, first of all, it's an equivalence relation. So you can check that if F is homotopic to G, and G is homotopic to, I don't know, something else, K, then F is homotopic to K. Second, if you free compose two homotopic morphisms by the same morphism, the result is still homotopic. If you post compose two homotopic morphisms by another morphism, the result is still the two results are still homotopic. So basically, the same formal properties hold, and therefore I can talk about a homotopy equivalence between complexes. So two formal complexes are called homotopy equivalent if you can find a morphism going from one to the other and another morphism going backwards, so that the composition going one way
is homotopic to the identity on one side, and the composition going the other way is homotopic to the identity on the other side. Okay? So I'm not writing any of this because it's the exact same definitions as in ordinary homological algebra. Two complexes are called homotopic if you can find, you know, if you can find morphisms going one way from one to the other and another morphism going backwards, so that the two compositions are homotopic to the identity. Okay. So now this thing makes sense in the place where I advertised it lies. Okay? Namely, it is it lives in complexes over matrices of cobordisms modulo these local relations, and I think of this complex that I just drew, that the picture represented, as well modulo homotopy. So I just consider it, well, I consider it modulo homotopy equivalence. And now I have a theorem. So the theorem is that the cube that I just drew, so the Hovanov complex of a link L, is an up-to homotopy invariant of knots and links. Okay? So its Euler characteristic in an appropriate sense, and I will explain it in a minute, is the Euler, is the Jones polynomial, what this I essentially already said. It is strictly stronger than the Jones polynomial. It is functorial, I'll have to explain that, and it is practically computable. That I certainly have to explain, because everything that I've shown looks completely removed from being practically computable. Okay? So let's start with a bit about computable. Okay? So here's a fact about the category of matrices over cobordisms. The claim is that in that category, the object, which is a column vector with a single entry called the circle, is isomorphic to the column vectors, the column vector that has two empty sets in it. Okay? So in other words, the column vector that has one circle drawn on it, okay, the column vector that has one entry and it has one circle drawn on it is isomorphic to the pair of objects, each of which is the empty smoothing. Right? When I define the cobordism, I said it has a boundary at the top, it has a boundary of the at the bottom. I'm also allowing an empty boundary. Okay? So proof. Well, if I'm claiming that this object is isomorphic to that object, I just have to construct the isomorphism. What's an isomorphism? An isomorphism is a map from this object to that column vector of objects, and then I also need to construct an inverse. So the inverse would be a map from this column of objects to back to the object I started from. Well, the maps are shown here. The map would be a cobordism going from here to the empty set, and another cobordism going from here to the other empty set. For the top cobordism, I'll pick the cap. The cap has on one side a circle, and on the other side an empty set. Okay? For the bottom cobordism, I'll pick one half of a cap with a handle. And again, it has a circle on one side and an empty set on the other side. For the inverse, I will pick the map going from the empty set to the circle by taking one half of the handle and the map going from the other empty set to the circle by taking a cap. Now, well, I'm asserting that this is an isomorphism. So I need to check that the composition going from here to here is equal to the identity. And I also need to check that the composition going from here to here, reappearing on the left of the screen and continuing back where I started, is also the identity. Okay? So let's check that. In fact, the relations, the local relations drawn above, were cooked precisely so that this will work. Okay? So, maybe I'll check just one or two of the things. Let's check that if I start from here, go to here, and come back, I get to the identity. But you see, this is really four checks, because going from a two-column back to a two-column is a 2x2 matrix. So let me just start by showing that if I go from here to here, and then back up to the top one, I get 1. Okay? Let's see, what do I get? Well, I get half of a handle to which I compose a cap. The result will be half of a torus. A torus is equal to 2. 1/2 of 2 is 1. So the upper left corner of the matrix has 1 times the empty cobordism. The empty cobordism is the identity from the empty smoothing to the empty smoothing. Likewise, if you go from here to here, meaning from here to here, and down to here, you will get a quarter times a genus 2 surface. A genus 2 was set to 0, so the other entry is the 0 entry. Another entry of the matrix is as it should be. And then maybe as the last check, let me check that if I go from here to here, I get the identity. Well, what do I get? I get cap followed by 1/2 of a handled cap. Plus, because I have to sum over all possible ways of getting from here to there. So plus a handle followed by a cap. So I get 1/2 of the right-hand side of the net-cutting relation. Therefore, it's equal to, well, 1/2 cancels the two, so I get, so the morphism going from here to here is equal to the tube, but the tube between two things is the identity. The identity in the category of cobordisms is just sort of the curtain that's drawn from the top to the bottom, which is exactly a tube. A curtain between two circles is a tube. Are you with me? Is this okay? Yes.
So it's fine, but I'm confused about the world we have. So for example, so in the bottom one, like we have a half and the curve in the so
yeah.
If I multiply the z one by k and divide the right one by k, then I think still how do I fix the coefficients? Because
well, I fix them. It's up to me. Okay, I fix them to be this way and it works. Now, if you're asking, are there other ways of fixing the coefficients so that things will work? I doubt it. I expect something will break. But no comment. I don't know. Okay? Okay. So back to my big complex. Where was it? Back to this big complex. So in the case of knots, this completely reduces, or not for links, this completely reduces messy picture shown here to the picture discussed last time for Chovanov homology using vector spaces. Why? Because you see, in the case of a link, if I have no, well, if it's a picture that looks just like that, okay? all the smoothings just becomes unions of circles. Each circle can be replaced with two empty sets, okay? With some degree shifts, which I told you to ignore, okay? But anyway, each circle gets replaced by two empty sets, and therefore, a vector of smoothings simply becomes a big column of empty sets, right? Where, I mean, this circle is replaced by two empty sets, this one is replaced by two empty sets. Overall, this object is isomorphic to four copies of the empty set. So overall, each column becomes just a big list of empty sets with some degree shifts, okay? And the morphisms, once you replace these objects by the objects to which they are isomorphic, and use the isomorphisms to rewrite the morphisms on the edges, the morphisms on the edges become morphisms from the empty set to the empty set. A morphism from the empty set to the empty set is a cobordism with no boundary. A cobordism with no boundary is just a surface, or a linear combination of surfaces, okay, with no boundary. But the local rules tell you that spheres are equal to zero, genus one surfaces are equal to two, and higher genus surfaces are equal to zero. So a surface with no boundary can be reduced to a number. So really, the morphisms in between are just matrices. Okay? And if you look carefully at the matrices you get, you find that they are exactly the same matrices that I would have gotten yesterday, that I got yesterday. So, using this circle is equal to two empty sets, this complex reduces to yesterday's complex. So what I'm doing is strictly a generalization of what I did yesterday. It is indeed strictly a generalization, because in fact, it makes sense for tangles just as well. Namely, if you have a tangle, say the tangle written over here, so a piece of a knot surrounded by a circle, then I can form the exact same construction, except now I will get coordinates between smoothings with boundary and smoothings with boundary, and such coordinates will be two-dimensional surfaces that are allowed to have a boundary. Well, they have a top boundary which is equal to the top smoothing, a bottom boundary which is equal to the bottom smoothing, and they're also allowed to have side boundaries which are straight lines running along the cylinder at the points where the smoothings themselves had boundary. Okay? And then everything else completely makes sense, and you get a Hovanov complex in the category of complexes of matrices over cobordisms for an arbitrary tangle. Okay? So now I'm in position to prove the theorem. Okay, that Hovanov homology is invariant under Rademeister. But before that, one further little statement from linear algebra, really. So this is a version of Gaussian elimination, okay? So here's a little claim. Suppose you have a four-step complex like this, where C denotes a whole column of vectors. So in general, capital letters denote columns of vectors or objects. So C is a whole column, D is a whole column, E is a whole column, and F is a whole column. B1 and B2 are individual objects. And then to completely specify this complex, I also have to tell you the differentials. So the differential from here to here, will be a column vector where alpha will represent a map from C to B1, and beta will alpha and beta will represent a map from C to D. Okay? Likewise, to represent a map from here to here, I will need a 2x2 matrix, phi, delta, gamma, epsilon. But in this 2x2 matrix, phi is really a 1x1 block because it goes from a single object to a single object. And delta is a column, gamma is a row, epsilon is an n-1x n-1 matrix, well, and so on. Suppose also phi is an isomorphism. Suppose phi is an isomorphism. Then the claim is that the complex written here is isomorphic to the complex written here, which has the exact same objects, but slightly different differentials. Meaning, the differential at the top, or the interesting differential, is phi, 0, 0, and then epsilon minus gamma phi inverse delta, and I have to invert phi in order to write this combination here. Unfortunately, I have assumed that phi is invertible. Okay? So, why is this true? Well, it's true because one writes an explicit isomorphism. Okay? One can write an explicit isomorphism between these two complexes, or said differently, well, really what you do is you change bases here and you change bases here, meaning you do row and column operations to this matrix. Namely, you get rid of the delta by adding phi, by multiplying the first column by phi inverse and adding it to the second column with a negative sign, and then you get rid of the gamma by another another row operation. This amounts to pre-multiplying and post-multiplying this matrix by a certain invertible change of basis matrices, and these change of basis matrices are precisely the isomorphism going from here to here. And when you're done doing this, so after you row and column reduce this matrix, you get that matrix. And that's basically the proof. Again, it's better done by hand and on your own. Okay? So these two complexes are isomorphic, but if you look at this complex at the bottom, it is a direct sum of two complexes. The uppercase part does not interact with the lowercase part. The matrix here is, it has zeros for the cross terms. Okay? And furthermore, one of the summands in this direct sum complex is an isomorphism. A complex which is an isomorphism, which is just a two-step complex, B1 going to B2 via an isomorphism, well, in ordinary homology theory, if you have an isomorphism, it has no homology. It's exact. And you can check that in my theory, or in my notion of homological algebra, a tiny complex which is an isomorphism is homotopic to the empty complex. So therefore, you can cancel B1 from NB2 and be left only with C going to D, going to E, going to F, via some, well, the same beta as before, a complicated thing for the map from D to E, and the same num as before. Okay? So, you see, this actually allows you to simplify the Hovanov complex of an arbitrary tangle. Because what you do is you, first of all, you replace every circle
by a direct sum of two empty sets, then you look at what you get, and every place where you see an isomorphism, you can change bases so as to isolate it and then cross it out. Then you see another isomorphism, you change bases so as to isolate it, and then you cross it out. Okay? And eventually you'll get hopefully a much reduced complex. Okay? So let me do an example. Let me take the hard side of Rademeister 2 and try to simplify using this procedure. So here is Rademeister 2 at the top, and the complex corresponding to Rademeister 2 will be a square. It has two crossings, so it will be a two-dimensional square of smoothings of the Rademeister 2. So the 0-0 smoothing, the 1-0 smoothing, the 0-1 smoothing, and the 1-1 smoothings. And in between them, there will be cobordisms, and I wrote the cobordisms on the board. Okay? Now, I could go ahead and simplify it, but even before that, I want to make a little comment. In fact, the Rademeister 2 tangle is the composition by horizontal gluing, by side-by-side gluing, of two tangles. One tangle that has one crossing, and another tangle that has just one crossing. And I claim that the complex for the whole tangle is in some sense the tensor product of the complexes corresponding to the left tangle, which is drawn here vertically, and the complex corresponding to the right tangle, which is drawn here horizontally. And the sense by which this is a tensor product is the following. Basically, the tensor product of two complexes always is defined by forming a double complex, by tensor multiplying the elements, the object, one to another, and forming a double complex, and then by collapsing the double complex to a single complex. This is exactly what I do here. Okay? So I tensor multiply this by that. The tensor product of this with that is defined to be their horizontal composition. You get that. The tensor product of this with that is their horizontal composition. You get that. The tensor product of, now for the differentials, the tensor product of this differential with the identity on this is what is written here. Likewise, the tensor product of this differential with the identity on here is what is written here, and so on. So basically, the complex for the left-hand side of the Rademeister 2 is the tensor product of the complexes corresponding to two individual processes. So I got this answer. Let me simplify it. Well, if I look at this complex, there is only one circle appearing in it. When I flatten this complex, it becomes a complex in which the zeroth column has a single entry, meaning this entry, and I've copied it to here. The next column, has this, which I copied to here, and then the next entry is this smoothing, which has a circle, so I can replace the circle by two empty sets, meaning so I get two copies of the smoothing drawn here. And finally, the last entry is this smoothing, which I just copied out. So this is again, after removing loops, the complex corresponding to the left-hand side of to the hard side of Rademeister 2. But now I look at this complex, and well, I didn't bother to write what the morphisms on the edges are, but at least it appears as if this is an isomorphism, because you see, this object is the same as that object, and you just have to check that the thing written here is in fact one. Okay? So this is an isomorphism, and likewise,
this map here is an isomorphism. I have a rule that allows me to cancel isomorphisms. So I cancel this isomorphism, and I cancel that isomorphism. And I'm left with a single object. But that single object is precisely the complex corresponding to the other side of Reichmeister 2. Modulo details, this is the end of the proof for Reichmeister 2. Okay. Well, I should say that the same procedure can be used quite efficiently to compute the Hovanov homology of very, very complicated knots. So here is the knot T76, and the torus knot, the 7-6 torus knot, and I think it has 35 crossings. Let's try to estimate how hard it is to compute the Hovanov homology. By following the definition from yesterday, I will have to consider a 35-dimensional cube, which has 2 to the 35 vertices in it, which is a very large number. And each vertex has, you know, has a smoothing, and each smoothing has several cycles, and each cycle becomes 2 vectors. Okay? So this the algorithm from yesterday, or the procedure from yesterday, would give us a, I don't know, 2 to the 40 or 2 to the 50 vectors and a matrix of differentials between the, matrices for the differentials between them, and then I'll have to do row and column reduction, and obviously it will never end. So in fact, an estimate from a few years ago was that actually computing this should take 1,000 years and about 1 gigabyte of RAM. Okay, so it's not very fast. But now I have a different technique. A new technique, right? And the new technique is, well, I start from one individual crossing over here, write the Hovanov complex for it. Tensor product it with the next crossing next to it, write the Hovanov complex of the result. If it has any loops, I reduce, I deloop them, I replace them by 2 empty sets. If I see any isomorphisms, I cut them out using the previous procedure. Okay? The complex becomes smaller already when I was talking about 2 crossings. Now I add the 3rd crossing and simplify. Then I add the 4th crossing and simplify. So I simplify as I build up the complex, and with luck, it will never grow to the size that it would have grown if I had constructed it all the way from scratch. Okay? And indeed, the fact that you get results, and here are the results, proves that this is doable. So this took about 1 day on my old computer. My new computer, that was in 1995, my new computer does it in 3 hours using the same program, and then this program ended up being rewritten later on by Jeremy Green and then by Scott Morrison, and now it's a matter of seconds. Yes?
What's the JR? Isn't that a logarithmic?
Yeah, so indeed, but maybe I should interpret the result. Remember that there were 2 gradings that I suppressed. These are the dimensions of the homology, of the homologies, when you get a matrix of dimensions, and here is what they are.
Okay?
Okay.
So you said that dim sub j and h sub r.
Oh, so I meant the j, the dimension of the degree j piece of the r homology. Okay?
And those are, this is an example of thick knots.
Sorry?
Example, thick knot. I mean, alternating.
Yeah, it's what's called thick knot, but I'm not sure. At the moment, I didn't say it. It's a notion that doesn't exist yet. I don't know. I have nothing to say about it.
I mean, this diagonal one, alternating knot?
Yeah, so, again, you're pushing me in a direction I don't want to go.
Okay.
So, you know, I thought I had to say something new for this conference, and I thought one lovely new thing would be to write the shortest, most concise possible implementation of this algorithm, so that you believe me that it actually runs. But you see, and the point is that actually, if you have an extremely concise implementation, then it must match with the mathematics almost exactly. Because you see, if the implementation would never be simpler than the mathematics, because then you could just simplify the mathematics. Okay? And if the implementation is absolutely minimal, it must match the mathematics. So there is some good thing to say about writing concise implementations of complicated algorithms. Unfortunately, I failed. So the implementation is fully on the last page of your handout. It's slightly different than the current version because I simplified it a bit further yesterday. But it's still a tiny bit more. It's still a bit more complicated than I'd like it to be. Nevertheless, I'd like to go over it very, very quickly with you and highlight a few key points, just so that you see that the program is not too different from the mathematics. So first of all, how are things represented? So consider, for example, the cobordism corresponding to the Riemann, to a single crossing which appears inside the Riemannmeister 1 move. So this is the single crossing which appears here. So let me label the edges around the crossing 1, 2, 3, 4, and furthermore, let me adopt the convention that incoming edges are labeled with negative numbers and outgoing with positive numbers. So this is really negative 1, 2, 3, and negative 4. Okay? Then how will I represent the cobordism corresponding to this? Well, the cobordism corresponding to this will be the cobordism between the smoothing drawn here and the smoothing drawn here, with some degree shifts which I represent by powers of Q. And how do I represent a smoothing? So a smoothing will have a pair of edges. This one will have an edge from minus 1 to 2 and an edge from 3 to 4 to minus 4. So I will represent it as a smoothing with an edge from minus 1 to 2 and another edge from 3 to 4. Likewise, the second smoothing appearing here, will be a smoothing with an edge from minus 1 to 4 and another edge from 2 to 3. Finally, while I actually want to represent a cobordism, to describe a cobordism, well, what's a cobordism? Modulum my relations. So I only have to specify what smoothing I have at the top, what smoothing I have at the bottom. In between, I fill in with genus zero surfaces, with disks. Okay? And these disks may or may not have handles on them. They cannot have more than one handle because then I will have a genus two surface. So basically, the cobordism at the top, the cobordism at the bottom, and a list of the handles the smoothing at the top, the smoothing at the bottom, and the list of handles specifies the cobordism. Now, for convenience, since handles often appear with a factor of 1/2, I will declare that 1/2 of a handle is called a dot. And then I just have to specify a number of dots, and by convention, I will always put the dots near the, near the ends. So really, the same cobordism with a specified top and a specified bottom, and a dot at minus 4 would mean that I have a little handle near this end. Okay, and of course, a dot at minus 4 is equal to a dot at 3. I probably have to somehow manage that. Okay? Now, for the case of the saddle,
for the case of the cobordism corresponding to a single smooth to a single crossing, well, it's just a disk. Topologically, a saddle is just a disk with a specified top and a specified bound. So the dots are equal to 1, and this is this one here, no dots. Okay? Otherwise, I will have a product of dots over here. Okay? So I tell my computer, so now I want to do to compute the left, the right-hand side of Rademeister 1. So I tell my computer to take the empty complex, append to it the cobordism corresponding to a single crossing. That would be just the tensor product. And then once this is done, I'll merge 1 and 2. I'll put a vertical curtain linking minus 1 and 2. So basically, I will add this little chunk. This is this operation M over here. And if you want, here it is pictorially. So Mij will map a thing like this to linking I and J. Anyway, then I tell the computer to contract the resulting complex. Contract means apply this Gaussian elimination procedure. And the result is a complex with a single smoothing and zero differential. The single smoothing is from minus 4 to 3. So from minus 4 to 3, and that's the other side of Rademeister 1, and I've just proven the other side of Rademeister 1. Sorry, I've just proven invariance under Rademeister 1. Assuming that the program is right. So let's quickly look at the program. I don't think I have time for it, but I'll just go through the highlights, okay? So one thing that I need to do is I need to declare that if you have a dot raised to any power higher than 2, it's equal to 0. I'm just showing various pieces that actually correspond with the mathematics. The next thing I need to do is actually a bit awkward or a bit surprising. So you see, if you have a pair of smoothings, you have to know how many disks, if you complete it by adding a genus zero surface, sorry, disks in between, you need to know how many disks you get. You need to know how many connected components you get. This amounts to saying that you get two equivalence relations between the endpoints of cobordisms. So, you know what, I think I'll skip it, but you need to somehow be able to refine equivalence relations, and that's this little bit of code. Then you need to define vertical composition. You need to know how to take the vertical composition of two cobordisms. The tricky point is that even if you take the vertical composition of two disks, even if you have a disk here and a disk above it, the vertical composition could be of arbitrary high genus. And that's a little bit of a tricky point to see how you can compose disks together so as to get high genus. Now I need to compute this genus so as to eliminate it. Okay? And there is a little bit of an Euler characteristic tree that computes it. Then I need to define this map M that I defined, that I explained previously. And I think the key point in it is, for example, well, if in a cobordism sigma to which I want to apply the map M, if sigma of I is equal to J, so if I try to I have a cobordism in which I have a smoothing in which I have a line connecting I to J, and I want to close I to J, then I'll get a loop and I have to drop it. So I have to drop the IJ piece. Otherwise, I have to concatenate to existing pieces of the smoothing. So this is done here. Again, without detail. More interestingly, if I want to apply this map MIJ to a cobordism as opposed to a smoothing, so you see, now I have a general cobordism. I have a general cobordism, and I want to compose it with a curtain on the right. Well, there are several possibilities. Either the cobordism closes the top, or it merges two parts. So this would be merging two parts. Closing would be closing like that. So either you get the same number of components as before, or you get a loop. If you get a loop, you have to reduce it so as to get two cobordisms. So with an empty set. So in the program, if the bottom cobordism closes and the top cobordism closes, I'll get a 2x2 matrix. Otherwise, I'll get various options for 2x1 matrix, 1x2 matrix, or 1x1 matrix. I guess this is the definition of a tensor product, and I think I really cannot say much about it. This is the contraction piece. So if I find a phi which is invertible, not equal to zero, and the top is equal to the bottom, then I basically take the old matrix and subtract from it phi inverse times gamma times delta, which is the formula from before. And finally, here is the definition for the cobordism corresponding to an overcrossing and an undercrossing. And here's how the actual loop, the main loop is. So long as the length of the remaining piece to be computed is greater than zero, I find the best crossing to attach. I attach it. I contract the result after gluing all things that need to be glued. And output, the result is complex. So, sorry, I know that wasn't very clear, but let me show a few more examples of runs. So, let's do the Rademeister 2. So here is Rademeister 2 with full labeling. I type it in, so I take the empty complex, multiply it by a negative crossing with the appropriate labels, then with a positive crossing with the appropriate labels, then I glue 3 to minus 3 and 4 to minus 4. So this is, I glue 3 to minus 3, so the outgoing end of this crossing to the incoming end of that crossing, and then 4 to minus 4. I ask the computer to contract, and I get a complex in which there is a single smoothing, and all the differentials are zero. That's exactly the right-hand side of Rademeister 2. Then I do the same for Rademeister 3. So a product of 3 crossings, contracted in 3 places, sorry, glued in 3 places, and contracted gives me a mess. Then a product of 3 crossings, again, contracted in the same 3 places, but these are different 3 crossings, and again contracted, gives me again a mess. But fortunately, when I ask the computer to compare these 2 messes, it says that they're equal. Okay? So I've proven Rademeister 3. I think, you know, you could do it by hand much more easily. But part of my point is that a machine could have done it. It's a completely stupid check. And furthermore, it's the same machine that could compute the invariant of a 35 crossing knot. And in fact, here is an example. So I'm asking the machine to compute the invariant of the 9-5 torus knot, which is drawn here, which is, I think, actually 36 crossings. And after 800 seconds, it outputs this answer, which is... Well, maybe I shouldn't have gone into the program. I'm sorry. I wanted to emphasize that it's doable, but maybe I only at the effect of scarcity. I should have talked about functoriality instead. Yeah, I'm out of time. Sorry.
Yes, you. Can you make the program available to us as a mathematical problem?